I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray skies over West London, but I think decidedly black skies over the red half of Manchester after the derby. Yeah. We'll be getting into that. We'll be getting into plenty going on around Europe. Real Madrid held, first time they don't win this season. Yeah. Napoli still top of the league with Atalanta in City. Yeah, a bit special there. Nice goal from Leo Messi. I think that's an understatement.
Yeah.
And from Lewandowski. Let's be equal here. But we're going to start with another derby. The North London derby.
Yes.
Because many of us had doubts. Arsenal, the wheel's going to gonna fall off here or there. But no, they won, and they won convincingly against Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah, they played well. I was there. I thought they showed some character, especially after Kane scored, even if the 10 minutes maybe after the Spurs equalizer were a bit more wobbly. And I think Conte is right after the game when he said that there was one or two passes that if the ball had been better, Spurs were through on goal. But overall, I just thought they were quite dominant in what they wanted to do. And yeah, they scored goals that were helped by, I mean, one incredible shot from Partey. I think he's 0.04 XG. The mistake by Romero and Lloris, which helped them. But still, they kept on going and going and creating chances. And I think it's good. The process is going well.
I think it's an interesting one that you talk about the process because, you know, I think the question in many of our minds is, are Arsenal for real? You know, what is the ceiling this season for the team?
What does for real mean? What, for real to win the title? For real of what?
For real for all the kids. Look, Arsenal haven't had a particularly difficult schedule thus far. I kind of feel like this was I know, obviously, they played United. And I think they played somebody else decent early in the season.
So the team they faced ranked 11th in average in the league, right? The team that City faced were 14th and Spurs 15th.
Okay, just apart from these silly stats,
just putting that out.
Down, you know, or early in the season. That's not really relevant to me. So I just wonder, what is this team's ceiling this season? Can they challenge City for the title? They're ahead of them.
Yeah.
And when I say can they, obviously if City implode, Guardiola gets kidnapped, you know, they have a rash of injuries. But I mean, like, can they realistically go head-to-head at this stage based on what we've seen?
I don't think they're ready yet. But no one is as good as City anyway. No one is as good as City. I think
they have more points than City. And as you just told me with your advanced statistics, they faced better teams than
City,
supposedly.
This is my point. Over 38 games, that's why City is so good.
Right.
That's why they won 4 of the last 5 titles. Because over 38 games, not even Liverpool can catch them. So I think it would be hard for Arsenal to be there at the end, as in to win the title. But top 4, if they keep playing like this, but they're still very dependent on the Gabriel Jesus, for example, and you don't want him to get injured, on Thomas Partey, on those kind of players.
I don't know about the Thomas Partey dependency, because obviously they've been without him for big chunks of time in the past.
Against United.
But I want to ask about, Conte, annoyed by Emerson sending off.
Yeah.
Is he right?
I thought it was a red card.
Yeah. I'm actually with you on this. People are like, oh, but, you know, if you give a red card. I'm sorry. You do something that stupid and that unnecessary in that part of the pitch. Plus,
And the ball is like.
But he catches him on the ankle. Like, what are we talking about?
Exactly.
Like, I don't. My thing with Arsenal is this, right? Against a Spurs team who did not play particularly well. In the end, Arsenal scored 3 goals. One of them comes late, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
We put it down to 10 men. Really nice move, by the way, before I thought to set it up. But the other two, in the end, for all their chances and all their possession, we are still talking about Thomas Partey, wonder strike where the ball can go anywhere.
Yeah.
And a goalkeeping error from the France captain.
Yeah.
Had to slip that in there.
I mean, Romero helped him.
And at the same time, those Spurs breakaways, you know, Conte talked about sort of messing up the last pass. You know, they get that pass right, they're through on goal.
Yeah, okay, but then the penalty for Spurs is a big mistake by Xhaka first and then Gabriel. I mean, there's very often you score with a mistake of the opposition, right?
Right. I'm not doubting that.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but you can also score by overwhelming, as Manchester City did against
them. I think they also had chances. I just think we can't be too harsh on a team that is, of course, he's top of the table and having a very good start of the season, and you see what they're trying to put in place, and you see what they're working on, and I think there's a lot of very positive things, but they need a bigger squad, they need more depth for sure, I think they need to be even more precise in what they do with the ball at times, because sometimes it's still a little bit like, overwhelming for them and what Arteta is asking them to do. And yeah, defensively, when they lose the ball, they don't have the control that City and Pep have, yeah, for example, with the inverted fullbacks.
I was kind of being contrarian on purpose. I actually you have to take into account that they played against a Spurs team who defend very well and know how to defend very well and sat deep. I don't think they created a zillion clear-cut chances. I thought they created fewer than you. And I thought, you know, the goals were, I'm going to say, happenstance, but, you know, they're not things that you can count on.
Yeah.
I think we both seem to agree that Arsenal right now are unlikely to be able to challenge City this season.
Over the length of the season, yeah, it's hard to
say. And you said that the squad needs to be deeper. Fair enough. I mean, I think they have a squad built for the European competition in which they play.
Yeah, they have a good squad.
Simple as. What I'm not 100% clear on, though, and I have to hold my hand up about Gabriel Jesus, I'm still not 100% sold that he is the answer in terms of a goal-scoring center forward, even though obviously he's got, what, five goals this season, which is the number of goals that Erling Haaland scored this morning. I'm just kidding. But I do wonder a little bit, though, about sort of projecting forward the type of football that he plays. I felt in this game they were closer to the type of football that City plays in terms of the way, in terms of what they tried to do.
There's a lot of similarities, really.
What are the differences? That's what I'm interested in.
I think
in
a bit of quality. You have to be honest here.
Partey's not Gundogan.
No, I mean, they don't have a De Bruyne. They don't have a Haaland, of course. They don't have Cancelo either. You know, I can understand why what Arteta is trying to do. Well, with Zinchenko, it's easy because he kind of was born in it.
Right.
But with Ben White, even, to try to have the inverted fullbacks and then for them to play in a different way than a more traditional right back, for example, for Ben White. But it's still not there yet. You know,
with Ben White at right back, I thought what he was going to do is kind of do the 3.5 defense, right? So in other words, he sits, Zinchenko moves into midfield to build play.
Yeah.
He didn't really do that. And I almost felt that, like, that's what Spurs were expecting. And part of the reason Ben White was so effective going forward in this is that Spurs, it was a curveball for Spurs. It kind of messed them up. They were kind of expecting, okay, when Arsenal get possession, they're going to revert to a back three, Zinchenko's going to come inside. And I really thought it caught them off guard.
Yeah, a little bit. And also it forces, obviously, I mean, Richarlison on Zinchenko and then Son on White to do even more defending. I mean, Son, just briefly on Spurs, every time Saka had the ball and was 1v1 against Perisic, Son had to sprint literally to come and make a 2v1 for Spurs. Start of the second half, he's a bit too slow to do it, and then Saka has the shot that leads to the Gabriel Jesus goal, for example. So it was a clear plan. But obviously, if White is there, there's even more reason for Son to come back and defend. The problem is, when Arsenal lost the ball a couple of times in that first half especially, then both Zinchenko and White were so high that it was Saliba and Gabriel against, at times, Richarlison and Perisic, Kane, Son, all of that, which could have benefited, I think, to Spurs. But the difference between City right now and Arsenal, despite all the similarities, and there are a lot of them, and rightly so, because Pep worked 3 years with Arteta, is still a bit of quality, of course. It's still a bit of know-how on, you know, don't get panicky in a way when it doesn't work. Keep going, keep doing the same things. And I think at times there's a lack of urgency for Arsenal that there isn't with City. And Arsenal at times is still a bit of, we pass the ball, but there's not much end to it or purpose in it. With City, there's always purpose.
I think this is the biggest difference. And I haven't looked at the numbers. I'd love it if somebody out there who's deep into analytics goes against numbers in this. But it feels to me like Arsenal's passing right now, and, you know, look, football ultimately, when you think about it, right, is about creating overloads and creating space so that somebody can run in there and take a shot on goal, right? Or that you can cross the ball for somebody waiting in the middle. And very broadly speaking, you either do this, there's three ways you do this, right? You either force a mistake from the opposition, whether by pressing or whatever. You either pass the ball effectively to move people around, move them out of place, or you simply go and beat an opponent. You know, you do it with an individual run, you run at somebody, you take them on, and you create an overload. I feel that with Arsenal, right now they're much more effective in that latter part. I mean, they press well. Obviously, you're not going to press much against Spurs because Spurs were sitting really, really deep, right? So you wouldn't really judge them on that. The passing side is where I think there's a lot of room for improvement. One of the arguments in the modern game is that, oh, it's a lot more one-on-one oriented than it is collective oriented. And obviously City under Pep have that in their locker too, because, you know, Grealish, Sterling, right back in the day, Foden, all these guys can do the one-on-ones. But is that the difference? Is that Partey and Xhaka cannot give you right now, and maybe never, Odegaard, slightly different. Can't give you what De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, David Silva before him. Though they can't give you that.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. There's also, I think the use of half spaces, that is obviously, City do it so well, better than anybody else. And I think Arsenal are trying to get there. We saw Xhaka, not so much in this game, because
There's no half spaces when there's no space at all.
I mean, I was really, the first half where I was sat was on the kind of half of the pitch where Arsenal were attacking. And I have to say, and I'm going to be quite critical of Conte later, but I have to say I was really impressed by how well they defended in that line of five and the line of four. And I know, as we always say, it's easier to put in place a very strong defensive team and very efficiently than to put together a very efficiently attacking side, because it's much harder to find patterns of play when you attack than when you defend and when you don't have the ball. But they were so good at it. Yeah. Apart from the party goal, where they give him too much space. And that's the problem about playing deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, is that if you don't come out and close people down quickly when you're too deep, then you leave that kind of space for someone to shoot. He can try another 99 times and he's not going to score. Although, we talked about XG of that goal
96
before.
96 times if your XG count was accurate.
True. 0.04. However, XG on target for a shot from there is 0.34. Which shows that if you hit it well and on target, usually it goes.
One out of three times it goes in.
But still, more often than when the agent, which I thought was interesting.
You're listening to the Arithmetic Podcast with Gav Marcotti and Julian Lawrence. A final word on Arsenal before we get to Spurs, and this is kind of inside baseball in the weeds, but I have several friends, including my buddy Mike Feinberg, who I played football with, who are way, way deep gooners. And they've been talking about Tim Lewis. You know, there's a certain subset of supporter who loves the machinations behind the thing. And they've been talking about Tim Lewis as if he's their mate and they know him and stuff like that. I know you know who Tim Lewis is. I've discovered who Tim Lewis is.
Yeah.
To the general public, who is Tim Lewis and why should Arsenal fans care who he is?
Because he's, I think, one of the directors of the club, I think, to put it simply. He's very close to the Kroenke family. He's worked... through the businesses of the Kroenke family.
Josh or Stan?
Both of them. He's very close to both of them. They trust each other. They trusted Tim to come to the club.
Please tell me he's not another lawyer. I think he is, yeah. But go ahead.
He's also a big part of why Arsenal are much better now, where there's a lot of positivity around the club, because he helped with the way the club has been running. He helped as well... Vinay Venkatesan, for example. I think he helped with the dynamic of the club. I think he's quite close to some people at the club. I think he has a vision in terms of, I mean, business-wise, he's very good at all business things. He's a very intelligent guy, but also at what it takes to make something work and something win.
So the report I saw said that he was kind of an external guy to Arsenal, but worked for the Kroenkes and sort of advised them on Arsenal and stuff like that. Yeah. But the report I saw says that now he's kind of quit his day job, as it were, and his sole focus is Arsenal.
Yeah, I don't know about that in terms of if it's 100% Arsenal and everything, but he's been very, very present in the last, I don't know, I would say two and a half years, maybe more. I don't know exactly, but he's been very influential and very important and very present and hands-on, really. Whereas I think at the beginning, maybe it was just like, go to the club, have a look, see what happens, see what works, what doesn't work, and then report to the Kroenkes. Now I think very much is a big part of what, the top of the club is doing.
Right, let's get to Spurs. Part of me says, all right, you it's a North London derby. You got to play the derby and not go with this game plan of sitting back and defending. And I've made the point that very few teams are successful doing that. I don't think it's the only way Spurs know how to play. I think they can beat you in different ways. Equally, if I have those three, Richarlison, Son, and Kane, in a game like this where I know Arsenal are going to play a certain way,
yeah,
I don't see anything wrong with really emphasizing the counter more than the build-up. I don't see anything wrong with
No.
I win the ball, and rather than trying to get the whole team to step up and turning it into, to use a basketball analogy, a half-court game, getting the ball forward quickly. The problem is those three were pretty imprecise in transition.
Yeah.
And Arsenal defended the transition. I thought they defended it well. I don't think it's just a case of Son and Kane misplacing their passes.
Yeah, no. What I thought watching the game was like, I get the game plan, and maybe on another day it works. I don't know. He's worked before, and Conte certainly is very good at these kind of game plans. I just thought with the players that he has, and again, let's not forget that Kulusevski was injured, Lucas Moura was injured. The only attacking player on the bench was Brian Hill, who was never going to come on. I mean, I don't even know why he was there. So it's difficult if you go behind to change something to make, like, you can't bring on Richarlison like you did at Chelsea, for example, where you were lucky to get a point, but still, when you brought him on for the last half hour, something changed, the dynamic changed, and you came back into the game.
You can't use Kulusevski's absence as an alibi.
It's true that if you only have Brian Hill on the bench.
So you bring on Sessegnon and move Perisic further forward. Like,
But what I mean, but despite that, my point joined yours, right. I find it, in a way, outrageous that they don't play more football. I cannot understand it, Gab. And I promise you, I think this Arsenal team could also struggle against a team that plays and against a team that plays well. Yeah. And I think as good as Arsenal are on the ball and you don't want to give them too much space, I get that all. But they would also struggle against a team that moved the ball. And I expect them to struggle against the Brighton team, against City team. Let's see next weekend against the Liverpool team, even in crisis. Because I think they can also struggle a bit like that. And yet, you just left them the ball. I mean, I'm not even going through the substitutions when you're 3-1 down. I mean, I don't know why it takes him so long after the red card to change something to start with. And then to give up on the game when you're 3-1 down with 20 minutes to go just because you're down to 10 men and you take Son off, Richarlison off, and bring Sessegnon, Bissouma, whoever the other dudes were. I'm like, why? Because if I was a Spurs fan, I would be mad at Conte for doing that.
I think at that point, and this is something that you're seeing creep in a little bit, there is such a concern about the congested fixture list. And like, if, I mean, we're going back to maths here, right? If I take those 15 minutes away from I forget what minute Son came off, but right? But,
yeah, 20 minutes ago.
20 minutes ago, okay. So 20 minutes, that is roughly what, 22% of the game, 23% of the game, right?
Yeah.
I've reduced the chances of him picking up an injury, a muscular injury, whatever.
Okay, so you give up on trying to get a point even in the game.
Because at that point, I've accepted my chances. I'm playing the percentages.
Yeah.
And my chances of getting back into the game are lower. We with 10 men at that point are lower than the chances of something bad happening, which is then going to hurt me further on. I genuinely think this is the calculation. I mean,
yeah,
I don't,
maybe. I just don't think that's good enough.
I don't see the reason in it. I mean, the alternative is you bring on more attacking players, you take more chances with 10 men against 11. But, there's numbers that tell us. I'm not saying Conte is, a guy who simply sits there with, and he's got an analytics nerd in the closet and wheels him out. Like, we see again, like in the NFL, should we go at it in fourth down? What does the chart say? Whatever. But I just really think at that point, they said, let's take the L, let's move on, let's sort things out in the Champions League and in Europe.
Maybe your defense on that.
This is the thinking that comes into it.
Okay, what's the thinking about waiting? It's almost, 8 minutes between the red card and the third goal and the substitutions when you could have red card for Emerson, you said, okay, straight away. And I think Sessegnon is actually ready to come on, and he waits and waits and waits and waits, And then there's the third goal. And after that, he said, okay, let's change everything. I don't understand what, because at 2-1, if you bring Cessinho straight in for
Richarlison, you've got fresh legs or whatever, maybe you
can still
something.
you can still play your five at the back, and then you play three and then one with Kane on his own.
I cannot answer that, Jules. I cannot answer that. Only Antonio Conte can answer that. But you're right. I was surprised by that as well.
And I mean, just to finish, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Saliba. What a player.
Championing this guy for years and years. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Arsenal. Let's talk City. Now, whoa. Jules, okay, let's get this out of the way.
Yeah.
Because I can tell. I know you so well at this stage. Let's get the praise for City out of the way.
Yeah.
They were devastating. Shout out defensively what they did. Manuel Akanji, yeah. Sergio Gomez, all these dudes, right?
Yeah.
Who are, you know, let's face it, are just guys. Nathan Ake is a guy,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they play so well. They scored 6. I feel like they could have scored 10. Maybe 15. That's just in the first half. Hat trick for Foden and Haaland. We'll come back to them. But I need to ask you this. Do we have another Dutch guy?
I mean, what you have to... I was almost texting you and then I thought, like, let's keep it for the show.
Oh, and by the way, before we go in, when we plan out the show, right? I asked Jules, what should we lead with? North London Derby or Manchester Derby, right? He's like... I don't want to lead with his demolition. Serious. There's nothing said.
It's not serious. But Erik ten Hag has to come out and explain what was his idea preparing for this match. And okay, it was an international break before. It was the same for everybody. What did you set up your team to do? What did you tell your players to do? Because from me watching the game, they clearly had no idea on how to stop City, what to do to make sure that City couldn't have the freedom. I mean, it's not even freedom. You know. Sometimes one of the awards you have in this country is like you give the city of...
The freedom of the city.
Yeah, freedom. I mean, this is the freedom of the whole country. Literally, City players had so much space to move with the ball forwards, to take their first touch, to turn, to come and get you 1v1, to shoot, to cross, to pass. I mean, what was going on?
So he explained this, Jules. He said that they had a plan...
I suppose
the plan was to be more aggressive and not just lay off them.
It can't have been that.
Not Varane sitting like 5 meters behind the defensive line. But the players didn't execute the plan the way he wanted to. I mean, that's what I took from his post-match comments when he explained why this was different from Brentford.
I think because they won 4 in a row, he thought, do you know what? We're in a good shape now. I can take Pep and we can take them at their own game. Let's go there. Play Eriksen and McTominay. I mean, come on. Eriksen and McTominay in midfield against this City team at the Etihad with Haaland in that kind of form is not acceptable and not forgivable. Casemiro on the bench.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get to that. I genuinely wonder. I've been around so much football. I don't know Erik ten Hag. I've been around so many football folk who are superstitious. And I'm thinking to myself, he didn't change the team from last time. Right. This is the same 11 who started the last game when they've been winning.
Yeah, and the one before.
And I'm thinking to myself, oh, please don't tell me he's another one of these superstitious guys. Like, you know, oh, I put on my purple underwear. Let me not change it for 3 weeks because we've been winning. Because this was a game that was crying out for it.
But completely.
The Casemiro thing, all right, he was in international duty, right?
Yeah.
But I presume so were McTominay and Eriksen and
everybody
so on.
Everybody was, yeah. But in Paris, by the way, in France, it's not like he travels to Brazil. I mean, exactly. I think Ten Hag traveled more to go back to Holland than Casemiro to go to France and back. I mean, come on.
He hasn't started a league game yet.
No.
For Manchester United. And I'm just thinking, what is going on in this dude's head when he's thinking like, man, last May, I was starting in the Champions League final. I was winning the Champions League final.
I'm the best in my position.
I was winning the league. And now I go, and in front of me, who's playing in my place? Christian freaking Eriksen, with all due respect, yeah. You know, phenomenal player. This is not his position. He's not a deep lying midfielder. In a game definitely where you're not going to have 60% possession, you don't need Eriksen back there running around, tying himself out.
Thank you.
Freaking McTominay are the people who are keeping him out of the side.
That's crazy.
What does Casemiro think?
But preparing for the game, I was like, okay, maybe Ten Hag is not as genius as Pep or Klopp or whatever, but he's an elite coach. He's an elite manager. He's going to come up with something to go where the Etihad against this incredible team. He's going to come up with something, and I can't wait. I can't wait to see what he comes up with from his tactical sort of genius mind. And then I see the lineup. I said, okay, maybe there's something from the lineup, from the 11 that starts, that we don't know yet. But maybe it's a three at the back with Malacia. I don't know. Maybe there's something in midfield. Bruno played. And then it's the 4-2-3-1. I'm like, you're going to get destroyed here. Literally, I promise you, I kick off, you're going to get destroyed.
Yeah, it was not a good look. I want to touch upon Cristiano Ronaldo not coming on. Mm. Some people said, oh, it's disrespectful that he can't even come on. No, it is respectful to Cristiano Ronaldo not to bring him on at 4-0 down. This is not why Cristiano Ronaldo's there. This is not why he's about. It would have ended badly. I'm assuming Cristiano was happy that he didn't come on because he does not deserve to be tainted by this nonsense. Yeah? That's for Martial to pick up goals in garbage time. Yes?
Yeah, no, maybe. Right. I get that Martial needs some game time, blah, blah, blah. But
no need for Cristiano to come on in this game. You disagree with that? And I'm sorry. Let me throw out the caveat, though, that Erik ten Hag, I presume, knows Cristiano better than you or I do.
Yeah,
and he knows how Cristiano's going to react. And in this situation, that is the most important thing, right?
Yeah.
Is he going to take it worse if I leave him on the bench, or is he going to take it worse if I send him off? I'm going to assume he takes it worse if you send him on at 4-0 down or at 6-1 down. I'm going to assume that's why
maybe.
You did it.
No,
and
maybe.
I fully understand that. And I back Ten Hag, at least on that one.
Yeah. I'm just thinking City are not going to be as good in the second half because they're so dominant and they're so good already that they're going to, you know, kind of not take it easy. But, you know,
you're going to score 4 goals and come back.
No, not come back. But you should be better, and United were better, slightly better in the second half. I'm just thinking Cristiano is going through a big goal drought in a way. Yeah. I know he scored in the Europa League, but like, come on. We saw that with Portugal against Spain when he missed all the chances.
Did not have a good game in the Nations League.
I just wondered. I mean, I understand. I get the point. I get your point. You made it really well. I get Ten Hag point, and maybe that was what Cristiano wanted, not to come on. Maybe. I don't see it as a lack of respect if you bring him on and he has a good 30 minutes or a good 45 minutes where he gets game time, where he scores maybe one, maybe two, even if it's just a pen. I don't know. He would have taken that Martial penalty. And maybe the confidence comes back. I don't know.
You think Cristiano's lacking in confidence?
No, sorry?
You think Cristiano's lacking in confidence?
Yeah, massively. But I think you could see on his face, you could see in his body language, he's late half a second. But even the game he scored against Sheriff, you could see it, that he lacked confidence before the penalty. I really think that it's not a good time for him.
Right.
And I just wonder if a game like this.
And you said, so you send him on at 6-1 down.
No, maybe not. Maybe you're right. I'm just saying. Now he's going to play in the Europa League, a game that he doesn't want to play either, by the way.
He'd rather come on at 6-1 down.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just, you know, like, I don't know. I don't think there was a. Maybe not right. It was a tricky situation, I think, for everybody, maybe. But maybe you're right. Maybe I'm wrong.
Should we talk some Haaland? You got something? He scored with his head.
So,
remember, that's the area he was going to improve.
I mean, I think the stats.
To be fair, he was out jumping Christian Eriksen there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, again, marking and stuff. I mean, the best one is the De Bruyne pass and how he extends his leg to hit it. And Varane is injured, and I don't think Varane can react really the way he would have liked to do. But it's an incredible goal. He's running everything. And 3 hat trick, 9-8 games in the Premier League. Obviously, beating the
it's only 2 more than Phil Foden.
True, but the previous record of how quickly you scored.
Oh, I've seen
three.
The stat. This is a
but it's amazing.
Stat.
I mean, Michael Owen 40. Why?
It's a silly stat.
It's not. It shows you how hard it is to that. Score a hat trick. Yeah, of course it does. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's if you continue like this, how many goals is he going to score? Like 55 or something?
All right, I think Dixie Dean from the Dixie Dean, who young guns out there don't know, is the all-time. Holds the all-time single season record in the English top five. I think it's 61 goals or 63
like
goals,
that.
Something
didn't
like that.
Didn't he have 29 at Christmas or something like
no,
that?
No, you're thinking of Clive Allen.
Oh, sorry.
Who scored 49. All right, so Dixie Dean played before the war.
Yeah.
Clive Allen, actually. Clive Allen is still alive.
Yeah,
Clive
Allen,
if you're watching football in England, yeah, you can
hear his voice. He commentates on Ligue 1 because he played for Bordeaux.
He scored 49 goals in a season, I think, for Spurs, was it? And I think he had 26 or 29 by Boxing Day.
Yeah,
this guy's up to what, like 17? Something stupid
already,
like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway.
I mean, it's crazy. The team that defended the best on him is Bournemouth. I'm not sure where this is going, by the way, but I'm just telling you what I feel. And they had a plan. Not very good, because in the end he still gave an assist to Gundogan, and Gundogan scored and they lost 1-0. But at least they had a plan. I cannot understand. And I think to a certain extent, Dortmund had a plan when they played City. And outside of his incredible Johan Cruyff-esque goal or Ibrahimovic-esque goal, they defended really well on him. I could not understand how you can go in a game like this. And again, I don't want to go too hard on
Ten Hag. Back on Ten Hag.
Without Erling Haaland playing.
What do you have against Dutch Baldman between Ten Hag, between Peter Bosz? Seriously, we're going to find out that Ronald Koeman actually is wearing
but
a wig.
But like, come on, bring me a
bald.
Plan. Do something. You can't let this guy run like this because he's going to score a million goals.
You earlier we were talking about sort of the one-on-one factor and the ability to pass. I also thought this was a game, and okay, United made it very easy for him. But I always thought, like, how is Grealish going to get better, right?
Yeah.
I thought this was a game where he made the right decisions at the right time about when to take the opponent on.
Very good.
And when to pass. I need to see him against better opposition, frankly.
Yeah. But it shows that you don't have to be focused or obsessed with Grealish's stats of assistant goals. He can be very influential in the game, very important.
Absolutely.
In a game where he doesn't score an assist, it doesn't matter, like he did against, as you said, a poor position.
All right. Final point, because I think this is going to kind of get lost in the wash, right? I think Rodri is critical to City, to the way they play. He's in their worst team without him.
Hmm.
I want to just underscore how in this game, City played most of the game, and United were terrible, whatever.
Yeah.
With Akanji, who I believe was making his first start, and who's coming off a terrible season, first league start, coming off.
Yeah, he played against Dortmund in the Champions League.
He's coming off
maybe second. Yeah, second.
He's coming off a terrible season last year at Dortmund. Nathan Ake, who hardly played in his first two seasons since coming over, and is Nathan Ake in the end, right?
Yeah.
And most of the game, Sergio Gomez, who,
just arrived.
He's a dude who they signed from Anderlecht, right? And they still looked like Manchester City.
Yeah.
That's coaching.
That is amazing.
That is coaching. That is, and you can't even say, but it's so much easier to play if you've got great players around you, because those dudes play at the back. They don't have great players around them. They have each other around them,
right?
I thought that is a real testament to the environment that just allows you to integrate people very, very quickly. Because honestly, those guys at other clubs, I don't know that they succeed the way they did in this game.
Yeah.
Also helps when you're playing United, this version of Manchester United. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/GabJules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/GABJULS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/GabJules.
All right, enough Ten Hag. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Real Madrid are held 1-1 by Osasuna at the Bernabeu as Karim Benzema misses a penalty on his return. Aye. Jules, reason for Madridismo to be concerned or just the famous Osasuna penalty jinx?
Because remember last season, Karim missed two penalties.
And they drew.
Against Herrera. And he missed it one again. I think he forced it. He tried to hit it too hard. He hit the top of the bar. I had a feeling he would miss it as well. It was really annoying. The concern is that Luka Modric was not there. And the lack of creativity was there, though, because it was slow. They had a bit more chances in the second half. And they could have won the game. They could have won the game. And we would have said they won. They didn't play well, but they won. The fact is, they didn't play well.
No.
And they didn't win.
No. And both goals were kind of weirdo goals, like the weird looping header. Yeah. And of course, Vinicius crossing the ball and nobody getting the ball going in. But still, yeah, not good.
Not good.
And it's the first time they don't win this season.
Yeah, exactly. Sticking with Madrid, they declared a 20 million euro pre-tax profit. Gab, President Florentino Perez doubled down on the Super League, saying it was the only way to save football. And I had a little dig at Nasser Al-Khelaifi as well, of course.
Look, I get it. You're in favor of the Super League. You will never get a Super League, except via the courts, if you keep speaking nonsense. You have to make an absolute case. And I'm going to mention two nonsensical things about why football needs to be saved. One is he pulls out the Forbes list. Publishes this list of the most valuable franchises in history. And like, oh, look, you know, the top 13 or whatever are American football franchises. Yeah, so what? This is not how you make your argument. Leaving aside that the Forbes list, I think, is kind of speculative nonsense and not really serious. This is not evidence of anything. What? No, whoa, if my club, true. Which, by the way, I can't sell anyway because Real Madrid can't be sold. If it were higher on the list, football would be fine.
Yeah.
But what nonsense are you talking about? Secondly, and I hope somebody calls him on this, he mentioned that the NFL makes more money from television than the big five European leagues plus the Champions League and the Europa League combined. Guess what? It's not true. It's simply not true. It's simply not a fact. Now, I'm not saying Florentino's making things up.
No.
I'm saying whoever writes Florentino, helps him with his speech, does the research for him, doesn't know what he's talking about.
Ocon counts, yeah.
Or has trouble counting because, the Premier League alone in worldwide television rights between domestic, they make close to 5 billion a year. The new NFL deal makes about 10 billion a year. And by the way, that's an 11-year deal.
Yeah.
Throw in the UEFA competitions, which I think are around the 3.5 mark. And then you've got La Liga, the Bundesliga, Serie A, and Ligue 1. So just don't say things you don't need to make this argument. I mean, you can make your argument, but bring facts.
Yeah, exactly.
Quite the debut for our boy, Roberto De Zerbi, as Brighton travel to Liverpool and come away with a 3-3 draw. Jules, they could have been 4-0 up at one point. I'm going to ask you what club needs to do to fix it, but I know you appreciated his little flick control on the sideline. Did Zerbi, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Love that. And the way you described it was even made it all even more romantic and nicer anyway. And we know he was a good number 10 when he was a player. I was so happy for him and his little celebration at the end, because the league they deserved was that draw and that Trossard third goal and his hat-trick, by the way, which was amazing. Not many players score a hat-trick at on-field for the opposition side. So well done. You saw already a bit of the De Zerbi touch, especially the central midfielders and the way they were brave to play with the ball. And we've said it's going to be fun for Brighton fans. Yes, you're going to concede goals. And we saw that. And sometimes they're avoidable, sometimes they're not, because you take a lot of risk, but you're going to score a lot of goals, even with Danny Welbeck up front and Trossard and the others.
And Klopp? Individual mistakes.
First of all, don't give me the whole. We could not prepare well for this game because we didn't know how they would play. They've got a new manager. Okay, De Zerbi has been in the game for a long time now. We knew what he was going to do. This Brighton team, in a way, was not very different, to be fair, to what it was under Potter. So why are you coming up with that kind of rubbish excuse if you're a club? Start by fixing your
player's attitude, and especially defensively, because you can give me again the whole Trent is a great defender, you guys are wrong, it's because we press so high. There was a lot of time in that game where they were not pressing high, Liverpool, and Trent was horrendous defensively. So I think there's a lot, I think it's time for Klopp to work hard and the players on the training pitch and sort out especially the attitude, the lack of effort and everything, instead of finding excuses. More woe for Inter as they take the lead again, but end up losing at home to Jose Mourinho's Roma. Gab, they've lost 4 of 6 games since August. Is Simone Inzaghi in danger now?
Well, they did beat Victoria Pilsen in that run. Well, I think so much so that Gazzetta erroneously published a report that he'd been sacked and they took it down. And the funny thing is, they didn't play badly in this game.
No, it's simply,
I mean, they didn't have Brozovic. Aslani came in the middle of the park, moved the ball around nicely. It's just that Mourinho's Roma did what, Mourinho wasn't even there. He was in a van, outside, suspended. But they did what Mourinho's Roma do really effectively when he's good. You know, he dropped Tammy Abraham. They converted the chances that they had. Smalling's header. Handanovic, another mistake off of Dybala shot. Yeah, he hits it hard, but still, it's enough. It's time for it's Onana time. Onana time. Sure. Time for some Onanism.
Yeah.
Barcelona draw level with Real Madrid at the top of La Liga, winning away at Mallorca 1-0. Jules, not a super dominating performance.
No. Nope.
I know you're going to go nuts over Robert Lewandowski's goal.
Wow. Because maybe some of you didn't think that he could score goals like this and that he was a poacher, which he is most of the time, and that's what great strikers are. They're always in the right place at the right time, and we see that with Erling Haaland as well. But to score that goal, you know, kind of on his own, and the way he bends his butt, he was just brilliant.
And to put it in it's one teeny bit where you can put it.
But remember, there was one in the Champions League where, again, the precision in his shot was just incredible. He's so, so good. Napoli is the top in Serie A, beating Torino 3-1 with 2 goals from Zombo Anguissa and 1 from Varadona, of course. Gab, no Osimhen, no problem.
No, you are not when you've got Jack Raspadori in there. They demolished him in the first half and then kind of saw it the game and after the break, which is a very grown-up thing to do. Spalletti's got everything. This guy's getting everything right. He's got the right climate, and they're not dependent, you're right, on Osimhen. Same way they weren't dependent on Koulibaly. Kim's come in before. You know, this is the difference
now. It's really interesting.
A sublime free kick from Lionel Messi and a second half strike from Kylian Mbappe give Paris Saint-Germain a 2-1 win over Nice.
Yeah.
Jules, when I saw that midfield of Aaron Ramsey, Ross Barkley, and Mario Lemina, I got PL flashback circa 2015.
Yeah.
Should this have been easier for Paris Saint-Germain?
Yeah, it should. It was the first half for Ekitike, the young striker who replaced Kylian, and I think he needed a bit more time, and obviously the expectations were quite high. Yeah, they were never really in danger. They never created enough danger either, but Messi was great. And his first direct free kick for PSG, this season. And as he scored, the GOAT, you know, the brand GOAT, which is now PSG sponsored, appeared on the advertising board, which was just so fitted, so perfect. So well done to him. Graham Potter gets his first win as Chelsea manager as the Blues win 2-1 away at Crystal Palace thanks to a late strike from Conor Gallagher. Gab, Patrick Vieira and Palace are furious that Thiago Silva wasn't sent off, however. Are they right to be?
Yes, they're 100% right to be. I mean, Thiago Silva clashes with Nathaniel Klein. I guess he goes down, he handles the ball. I guess the referee thought it wasn't a denial of goal scoring opportunity situation. In my opinion, it definitely was. But equally, think of the knock-on effect this had, because Nathaniel Klein got injured. Nathaniel Klein's not Maradona, but you know, still a guy going out. Then on the next play, Thiago Silva goes and sets up Alba Mayang's equalizer, which Alba took really, really well.
Yeah.
And then Conor Gallagher adding insult to injury at the end with the goal. Yeah. He was on loan there last season. I thought this was really awkward for Graham Potter because of the lineup that Palace played with the 5 attacking players.
It was really...
I don't know what his Chelsea are going to look like. Not yet. I need to see more. They played 3 at the back, obviously, in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Now here it was a back 4. There's a lot of work to be done here.
Yeah.
Union Berlin are still top in the Bundesliga. Yes. Much to producer Freddie's happiness.
Of course.
Although they did lose 2-0 to Eintracht Frankfurt. And they're joined at the top by Freiburg, who beat Mainz 2-1. Happiness in Streichland.
Yeah.
Jules, when are these little fellas going away?
It's a good question, Gab. I mean, it could be pretty soon because not next weekend, but the following weekend, Freiburg play Dortmund. and Union played Bayern, or the other way around. So Union played Dortmund and Bayern played Freiburg. So we will know a bit more of what they can do in those games. It'll be very interesting. It's good. It's so good. I mean, the gap, because Bayern won, the gap is obviously shorter now because Union lost. But still, it's a good thing.
Yeah, you could look at this, and I know Union are wildly outperforming expected goals, and Freiburg haven't really played anybody yet. But, you know, to all those people who complain, oh, the Bundesliga is so boring, Bayern win 10 in a row. Hey, here's something different. I don't mind having them up there.
Me neither. Wild finish to the Empoli-Milan game, Gab, with 3 injury time goals. It's a 3-1 win for the Rossoneri and a superb goal from Rafael Leao that we mentioned briefly earlier, who is on fire.
He's on fire. The like priority A, B, C, D, E, and F for Milan is to get him a massive new contract. Not easy because, you know, he's got, I think, 18 months to run. And obviously he's got a lot of leverage there.
Yeah, if you're him, you wait.
But there's also the factor of, you know, the 16 million or whatever that he's got, that the court has said he needs to pay because for leaving Sporting Lisbon, somebody needs to pay. They had a lot of guys out in this game. They picked up a lot of injuries during the game. Calabria, Simon Kjær, Salamakers.
Yeah, Salamakers is a bad one.
Empoli are one of those teams that, you know, they don't have great players, but they try to play good football. They're kind of like a little Brighton redux. Brighton have better players, obviously.
Yeah, they play nice football.
And, you know, what was interesting here was, you know, Milan finally score. They're 1-0 up. And then, boom, Bayrami gets the equalizer. Tata Rosano, you know, I think he had some responsibility. You could tell Mike Maignan wasn't there.
He would have saved them.
They'd also created chances there. And then, come on, young footballers, after you scored an equalizer, pay attention on the kickoff. They didn't do that. Milan go back up the pitch to go 2-1 up. And then Rafael Leao, if you haven't seen this, go check it out. It's one of those runs. They actually calculated. It's like a 60-meter run. And sometimes, you know, like media companies have too much tech. So they actually calculated how quickly covers the 60 meters. And he's like 0.3 of a second.
At some point, it looks to me that he even slows down. He's so quicker than anybody else that is chasing him behind, that he slows down and he's still ahead and then dings the ball.
So apparently he's 0.3 of a second slower than the Portuguese 60-meter dash record.
Yeah,
that's what they said on a time television. It's got to be true. This is despite the fact that he's running in boots on a very wet pitch, and he's also running with the ball, and he has to slow down to receive the ball as well. Okay. Incredible stuff. Atletico Madrid win 2-0 away to Sevilla, Jules. Is this the final nail in Julen Lopetegui's coffin?
It has to be. I'm sorry, but we've highlighted it before. This is not the first time that they don't win. They don't play well. They've been even if they won before the international break, they've been terrible. And there's just no... Clearly, his message is not going through. There's nothing happening on the pitch. There's no changes, nothing. And as much as the players can take responsibility, this is clearly not working for him anymore.
Well, at 1-0...
against the president as well. I think he needs to go too.
At 1-0, they went all out attacking. That's what was weird. And like they just started streaming forward. And it was
crazy. Yeah. It didn't look like anything at all. And I mean, I'd be very surprised if he's not going. I mean, I thought he would have gone by now anyway. And I would be very surprised if he's not going very soon. And I think a certain Mauricio Pochettino would be quite interested in that job for sure.
You think so?
Yeah.
You don't think he's holding out for, no?
He might be, but I think this might interest him as well. And speaking of Atletico, Gab, Joao Felix was reportedly unhappy. I mean, you could see on his face anyway. At coming on with just 4 minutes to go.
Yeah, and some Spanish papers made a big deal out of it because afterwards, you know, he was all grumpy and stuff.
It's the same for Cristiano. Why do you bring him on when you turn it up with 4 minutes to go? What's the point? You talk about there was no point bringing Cristiano on. Okay. Which,
first of all.
What's the point there? No, tell me, what's the point?
First of all, you need to wash your mouth out with soap. If I ever hear you say, mention Joao Felix and Cristiano.
Not what I said. What's the point of bringing on Joao Felix at the 90th minute when you 2-0 up? What is the point?
I don't know. Maybe he can learn from the players on the pitch who put in a shift, who worked hard, whom are a lot less talented than he is.
No point.
I don't know. The guy needs to grow up. I'm sorry.
No, okay.
He's a phenomenal media creation, right? That's all he is. Right?
That's harsh.
No. No, in relation to how much they paid for him and what he's costing them.
But he's a super talented kid.
He's not a kid anymore.
No, okay, he's a super talented player.
What is he now, 23, 22?
23.
He's 28. I mean, come on.
I know.
What are we going on about?
He's super talented.
And you're going to go and you're going to mope? This is the part. If you don't want to be happy, you internalize it, you channel it, and you say, well, I'm going to make Simeone play me in the next game. This is how you do it.
I mean,
you
the last game, do you remember he took him off and then he went to the tunnel and then I think maybe someone had the word and he came back out to the bench. So it's not the first time.
But sorry, who do you think you are? What have you done?
But you know what?
Nothing.
I was a bit. It was.
He makes me angry because he has talent and it just hasn't gone anywhere.
No, but he knew that this was happening. This was going to happen if he stayed. Why didn't he move in the summer then?
Because if I were unkind, I would say that the reason he didn't move in the summer,
and no one came for him,
is the same reason that Cristiano didn't move in the summer, which is that Jorge Mendes, ultimately, while we think he's got the giant remote control controlling all of European football, he doesn't control European football anymore. Not in the same way.
But my point is, like, you cannot be unhappy. You knew exactly what by staying. You'd be in for, because that's what Simeone does anyway. He did that with you last season and the season before. So you had to accept
Simeone
it.
Simeone was hoping that, you know, he would develop into a Griezmann type, a guy who has quality. I mean, a good Griezmann, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A guy who has quality, but then he's also got the intensity and the workforce and become a better rounded player. It just hasn't turned into that. Yeah. Correa is the guy who offers that, and even he can't get on the pitch.
Yeah.
Wolverhampton Wanderers have sacked Bruno Lage following the 2-0 defeat at West Ham. Jules, right decision?
Yeah, right decision, I think. I mean, that game was bad overall. I think they were bad. Not terrible, maybe, but they're second from bottom. Only Leicester, who've been even worse.
They're third from bottom, yeah.
I don't think, if you don't see the direction this team is going, and again, they haven't been playing well, it's not all his fault, you know, the injuries to Jimenez. I mean, Diego Costa as your other option as a number nine.
Hey, where did Fabio Silva go? That was entirely normal transfer, spending money on him.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. So I feel a little bit for him because at times we saw some good things from Wolves when he was the manager. And I think he's a good guy, but this is...
I'm in two minds. I really like him.
I like him too.
I like what he's trying to do. He seems like a likable person.
Yeah, I think
equally. I'm not particularly fond of his employers and the fact that the club's allowed to exist to continue operating in this way.
Do you think they might struggle to replace? I mean, they will have, like, I don't know, Andre Villas-Boas or someone coming from Portugal.
Well, probably not him, for obvious reasons. But yeah, but
you know, like, I don't know. I don't know where you go now to choose. I mean, George, Uncle George is going to pick.
If there's one thing that Portugal, I mean, pound for pound, Portugal probably produces some of the very best managers in the world right now. Yeah. So I'm sure there's a long list of people. But I think you need a certain type of Portuguese manager here in this context because you're in a relegation scrap.
Yeah.
So it's kind of different.
Yeah. Borussia Dortmund should have been top of the Bundesliga. Right now, Gab, we should be talking about them as that. But they're not, because they managed to once again throw away a lead and lose 3-2 away to Cologne and flat cap cut hero Stefan Baumgartner. Gab, are you going to make excuses for Edin Terzic again?
First of all, I just want to mention how badass Baumgart is. Like, seriously, so in a street fight, I would take Baumgart over. I need to make my top 10, but I'm pretty sure Baumgart would be there. Right?
You know, the flat cap would not move as he's punching.
Yeah, no, he's awesome.
So
we've seen, injuries. All right, no Gio Reyna.
Yeah,
obviously no Haller, whatever. But in the first half, they take the lead. Julian Brandt actually does something, scores a nice goal. Yeah, and then, you know, they had the chances and so on. And then the second half starts, and it's one mistake after another. Meunier, Schlotterbeck losing his guy.
Again.
And then they're 3-1 down, and they score a goal in garbage time. I think it's time to say, Anthony, you're going to be our Peter Crouch. You're going to be the guy who's good at heading the ball, who we keep on the bench, Mr. Modest. Yeah. And then we send you on when we need to lump the ball, which hopefully will be never. Play Moukoko. I don't care.
Yeah.
He's not 15 anymore.
I mean,
he's 19.
A game like this, why would you start Modest against his former club when you know he's going to get so much?
No, and he just doesn't fit the way they play. He's just a different type of player.
No, definitely.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Timo Werner and Christopher Nkunku scored two each as Leipzig pound Bochum 4-0. They needed this, Jules.
Yeah, really much so. And they played really, I mean, Bochum, like, come on. Yeah. Really. But they needed that. Even if you play against a rubbish team that are not very good, you need, you know, you need to go and score those goals. Two each is very good. Momentum before the Champions League as well. Bit of confidence for Marco Rose. This was positive. And speaking of Leipzig, Gab, David Ornstein in the Athletic reports that Christopher Nkunku has completed a medical. I was told it was not a medical, by the way, but we'll see. And he's on his way to Chelsea for next summer. That would be quite cool for Todd Boehly.
It would be tremendous. I'm not 100% sure because the report also says that they paid more than the release clause. Does his release clause not kick in next summer? Is that
yeah, it does. Yeah, 60 million euros.
So why would they pay more than the release clause?
Makes no sense. What do you do medical right now? Okay. Well, because nothing can happen in 12 months. Like, you can't pick up an injury, can't pick up a problem. I find this story really weird because I was told again by someone very well informed that it was not a medical per se. For Chelsea Football Club,
like he was what? Like open your mouth and say ah.
No, for insurance reasons, he had to do like some sort of medical test, which I think some of them is probably like a medical, but not as a proper medical per se.
I'm also not 100% sure why you would pay more than the release clause. In other words, if you sign the deal with the player, I'm the player's agent, and then you just activate the release clause in the summer, you get the player, right? It's not, I mean, unless the release clause doesn't actually become effective until the summer, which I suppose is possible, but you can't register the transfer now anyway. Right.
Yeah. So,
I mean, and for all you know, Nkunku could decide to quit football and go join a cult.
Yeah, exactly. But even for him, why would you not wait until the end of the season?
But let's talk about on the pitch, though. Yeah. On the pitch, we agree this is a tremendous signing for Chelsea.
Oh, what player.
And I think this is exactly... This is exactly, I think, what they need if he can settle.
He's such a proper player as well. I mean, I know that was before Graham Potter, but he's such, I think, a Graham Potter player.
That said, there's too many bodies. If I'm Ziyech, if I'm Pulisic, I really start looking around. Yeah. And I think they still need to address the deeper midfield position because he's not going to play in the two there, right?
Completely.
Athletic Bilbao are third in La Liga as those pesky Williams boys continue to wreak havoc. Jules, I feel like we haven't talked about them enough.
They were so good. One score, the other assist his brother, then the other brother assists the other brother for his goal. I mean, it's great. Iñaki and Nico. One decided to play for Spain. One decided to play for Ghana to sort of pay tribute in a way to the roots of their parents. And
I thought they were paying tribute to the Boateng brothers who also decided one to
play for one for Ghana and one for Germany. That's true. And they all made their debut in the last international break. Nico even with the assist in the very important Morata goal against Portugal for Spain. Iñaki not so lucky with Ghana, but still, it's great. I want them both to go to the World Cup. I want them to play each other in the World Cup. I love the stories and they're so good. And the story that I think maybe a lot of the listeners know, but, you know, the parents obviously fled, had to walk through the desert. Their father's actually has no sensibility in his feet at all. And then they were obviously robbed by the people they paid to cross over, to go to Spain. They had to go. I mean, it's an incredible story.
Yeah.
Really, really incredible to see where they are now, where this family is. Now, after everything they went through, so well done to them.
The only thing I would say about Athletic Bilbao is pump the brakes a little bit. They're 3 points back, but they haven't really played. They haven't really been tested. True. They haven't played anybody yet. So,
but they have no European competition.
That is huge. And look at it. They've only played they've only played 7 games this season. It's crazy.
We're getting carried away, but we love this. Juventus defeat Bologna 3-0 to get their first win in any competition since August. That's right. Some relief for Allegri.
Well, Bologna played really, really bad in this game. What I thought was interesting, Allegri switched to a 4-4-2, which obviously gets the job done in this game. You had Weston McKennie wide, and he got to play Milik, who's in form with Vlahovic up front. Yeah. The thing is, I don't think we're going to see much of this formation again because, you know, the team's not built for it when everybody's fit, right? You don't have room for Di Maria in that system. You've got, you know, so it's kind of looks like you're putting a Band-Aid on. That said, Allegri above all needs a Band-Aid right now because Maccabi Haifa, you got to take 6 points off them to stay alive.
Definitely.
Otherwise, it's going to get really ugly really quickly.
Yeah.
Now, I know you want to talk about Lorient, who is third in Ligue 1, but Jules, I'd rather talk about our old buddy Peter Bosz. It's another defeat, 1-0 at Lens, with, to be fair, supposedly disputed penalty. I don't see what the dispute is. The guy shovels the ball into the air.
There's no dispute over that.
Okay, thank you. It's also, though, the first time in 30-odd years that they've lost four in a row in the league. I heard that stat. That can't be right, can it?
No, it is. It's incredible. I mean, just
quickly. Peter Bosz making history?
Well, history. Shout out to Lorient. Gab said the goal by Théo Lebrís, who's the young attacking midfielder, the winning goal against Lille.
You have ancestors in Brittany or something? Why are we talking about this?
Who's the nephew of the coach, Régis Lebrís, by the way. So shout out. They've played some great football. Great. Peter Bosz. Peter, I'm sorry, but now you need to leave us. You need to leave us in peace. Leave France. You love France. You played for Toulon. Now you're coaching in Lyon, but you're just not good enough, my friend. It is, Gab. Okay, the penalty, you could say it's a penalty. You lose on a penalty. But Lens were so good and so dominant in this game. They could have easily scored three or four goals. They hit the post. They hit the bar. Lopez made some two or three great saves. They destroyed them. It's not even, don't give me the like, oh, we weren't lucky to lose because the penalty was maybe a bit dodgy. They destroyed you, Peter. And we said to him, are you in danger, under threat? He said, what's threat? Like, you know, we said,
maybe he secretly,
are you
menacé
as in your threat, you know, for your job? He said, what's menacé? And was like, you should know because you're going to get sacked pretty, pretty soon. As soon as John Textor finally buys this club, by the way, which should happen soon now, I really hope they get rid of Peter because Peter is rubbish. Really, Gab, it was that bad. Gab, we've waited this long and still haven't mentioned the other team, which are top of Serie A, which is Atalanta, who beat Fiorentina 1-0.
Yeah, and like I told you, like if you don't get to see Atalanta often, if you thought, oh, they were quite fun last year and stuff.
Yeah.
No, this is total minimalist Atalanta. Gasperini is saying like, oh, I wish we didn't always win 1-0. I thought Fiorentina actually outplayed them for long stretches and deserved more from this game. Adamola Lookman, again, scoring. Your buddy Brandon Soppy playing out wide.
Yeah. You know, he was amazing when he was a youngster. And then I don't know what happened.
I didn't think it was the same guy. No, because I remembered Brandon Soppy being mentioned. Like, you know, people publish those lists of like 112-year-olds to watch.
And then went off the radar a little bit. Like, you know, I don't know what happened to him.
Well, he ended up in Serie A. That's what happened to him.
Very good scout.
But they're right up there. And I do feel like they can kick it up several notches if they start playing well. And, you know, they've lost players. They've evolved. They've added players. I don't think it's going to last.
No,
but they're showing things. But I do feel for Fiorentina, by the way, some ugly abuse directed at Rocco Commisso and Joe Barone from Fiorentina speaking out about this. I do hope they take this seriously. Yeah, you can't have it both ways. You know, the rules say, and for those who don't know, they used a term which is a derogatory term from the north of Italy towards the south of Italy.
Yeah.
Some people in some context say it's acceptable a little bit, like the N-word. It's not acceptable in this context ever.
Definitely.
Similar vein, 8 Sydney United fans were arrested in the final of the Australia Cup after displaying fascist flags and making fascist salutes. This was the game against MacArthur FC, who eventually won the game. Your thoughts, Jules?
Yeah, it was disgusting. Attitude, behavior, you could see it very clearly as well, and you could hear it. They were arrested. They were obviously expelled from the game. And as we always say, really hope now that the sanctions are going to be really tough. I mean, it felt to me there was more than 8, by the way. So I don't know how the investigation is going to go, but I hope they really, really go and make a stand and go hard on them because this is a club that has previous before. It was created by Croatian.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
no, no, I was going to explain that for those who don't know, and I didn't know this.
No, I read up on it.
But Sydney United were formed in 1958 by Croatian immigrants. Some of the symbolism they were displaying were symbols linked to the Ustasha, who were people who fought during the Second World War and who are identified as fascists themselves. This is a pretty animated bunch. I don't know if you remember, even at the Australian Open in tennis a few years ago, fighting with Australians of Serbian descent.
Yeah.
I absolutely hate it when I love it when people have historical roots
with
the
and
club.
We all do.
I don't see the need to export this to the other side of the world. I get it. You're proud of your heritage. The minute your heritage, though, or what you consider to be your heritage, because there's much more to being Croatian than you know, coming from the same country as the Ustasha, the minute you start impinging on other people and their rights, which is what you're doing when you are making fascist salutes in a stadium. That's when you need to be dealt with.
Exactly. Premier League clubs want to relax the rules on signing foreign players in what they say would be a money-saving effort. Gab, this is a little bit more complicated though, no?
Yeah, so apparently this came up at the last meeting. And as you know, since Brexit, if you want to sign players from within the European Union, the Foreign Office here, basically the Immigration Department, they've created a point system for young players and a point system for senior players and so on. And if you reach a certain number of points, then they can sign you. If not, they cannot sign you, which, by the way, is part of the reason why people are talking about feeder clubs. Oh, let's buy a Portuguese club, stick the kid there until he has enough points. They're saying now that, because as soon as these players reach the required points, which I think is 15 points if you're a senior player, then the price goes up. First of all, I have very little sympathy because they have more money than anybody else.
True.
Secondly, they're saying this way we can save money. The thing is, they're going to save money. They would need to get this approved by the Football Association and the immigration authorities. And how do they get that approval? They go and use it as a bargaining chip in negotiating with the Football League for the subsidy the Premier League gives the Football League. It's like, I know this is inside the weeds, inside baseball. Ultimately, they can do what they want.
Yeah.
I think this does go against the FA's priority of having more room for English homegrown players.
Yeah.
Leeds United have a man sent off and are held 0-0 by Aston Villa. Stupid, stupid red card from Sinisterra, by the way.
Yeah.
But Jesse Marsh is unhappy, Jules. He says Villa played too slow. Surprisingly, Villa manager Steven Gerrard says he doesn't really care what Marsh thinks.
Marsh always has something to say. Like, I don't know. I find that amazing. So the referees, the opposition, is this, is that. I like it. I think he's very passionate. And I think the stuff that annoys him, I think you don't need much to annoy him. I mean, I don't know if it's the same in real life. Like, if you don't put the things in the dishwasher, you're like, no, this is not, I'm not happy with this. I can understand his frustration. I mean, if I was TVG, I would be frustrated as well by the chances that his team missed, by the way. So I think it could have been...
with an extra man.
Yeah, it could have been even worse. Even if we said that red card was... that's why I'm wearing... I mean, it would be better than a lot of the referees.
I two quick points on this. One is, I don't like Princeton. I don't like people who went to Princeton.
You said that enough. You know?
So, I will leave that to one side. I also wonder... Marsh was suspended for this game. I'd love to know, why don't we, when we suspend managers, why don't we turn it into something that's actually meaningful? Because you know what? He's up in the stands. He's got a headset on. He's communicating. You can probably see the game better from there. And then he gives the freaking post-match press conference.
Yeah, that was wrong.
I'm not blaming Jesse Marsh here. Let's be very clear. No. I'm blaming the Premier League.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, you suspend a guy. No, honestly, you want to make this meaningful? You suspend a guy from 2 hours before kickoff until an hour after kickoff.
Yeah.
You're not even at the game. You're in a hotel room somewhere with somebody, with a chaperone, minding you to make sure you don't communicate with the team. If we're going to make suspension... hiding in the laundry basket. Yeah. Why have these punishments?
Yeah. Gab, we're on a tragic note, unfortunately. At least 125 fans are dead and hundreds more injured after following a stampede and violence match in Indonesia between Arema FC and rival Persebaya Surabaya.
This is absolutely horrible. We're still trying to kind of figure out the dynamic on this. Arema lost 3-2. Some other fans came onto the pitch after the game. The police reportedly used tear gas. There was rioting that caused a stampede at the exits of the stadium. You think back to all the stadium tragedies that we've seen, obviously Hillsborough, Lima, back in the day, Glasgow. And you wonder, how does this happen in 2022? So I just hope that there's a full inquiry, that they learn from these mistakes in terms of law enforcement, and that the people get some closure, because justice may be too much to call for here. Anyway, Jules, that brings us to an end. We're going to be back on Thursday because the Champions League is back.
Yeah.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.